for business.
You know, Mitch.
They love their Cougars.
Mitch Harper.
Welcome on in, Cougar Tracks Podcast, powered by KSLSports.com. I am your BYU insider, Mitch Harper. Spring football in the rearview mirror as the Cougars wrapped up camp this past weekend. Hope all of you had a fantastic holiday weekend. It's spring break for the BYU football coaches, all of them taking a rare week off before they head out on the road for spring evaluations and recruiting. So a little bit of a downtime post-spring ball to get a little bit of a break before things ramp up once again. And we're going to recap spring ball here on this edition of the Cougar Tracks podcast with a focus on the offensive side. If you go to KSLSports.com, I have my post-spring offensive depth chart projection for 2024, and I'm going to dive into a lot of that, where my reasoning, my thought behind those picks lie, and I'll explain that here in today's podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the show. Leave a 5-star rating and a review. It helps out the podcast a ton. So the big question around BYU football in 2024 is, of course, going to be at the quarterback position. BYU coming off a 5-7 season a year ago, first time without a bowl bid since 2017. This BYU program is looking to find its identity in the Big 12 Conference. And the Big 12 is going to have a new look this year, 16 teams. The four corner programs obviously join this fall. And BYU is looking to find its footing. And offensively, there's so many questions with BYU this year. We learned a lot, though, I must say, in spring. I think that some media would say, oh, we don't get to see much. And look, I'd like to see every single snap of every single practice. Believe me, I would. Because some of these scrimmages that they held that were closed, that's where you're getting a true sense of what BYU's going to be installing this season. But nonetheless, I think there were still things that I took away from spring ball that I think will carry over into the fall. And one thing in particular, as we start things off with the quarterback position, right now, I say Jake Retzlaff is in the lead for the job. And I think a lot of Cougar fans are maybe wondering, why didn't Aaron Roderick name him the starter if he was the decisive leader? The fact that it's still a debate going into fall camp, the first time BYU's going to have a quarterback debate entering camp in fall since 2021, that, of course, was Jaron Hall, Baylor Romney, and Jacob Conover. I think part of the reasoning here for Aaron Roderick and this staff and Kalani Sitake is juggling numbers, the transfer portal. They feel like they've got probably two or three guys that they could turn to in a game, definitely two with Bohannon and Retzlaff, and maybe three with Trayson Bourget having experience at the FBS level from his time at Western Michigan as a former starter. But it's a matter of managing the numbers, and no one's going to say that publicly. You're not going to say, oh, yeah, we're not announcing anyone because we want to maintain the numbers in the portal and avoid guys leaving to the portal. But that has to factor into the equation here a little bit. But coming out of spring, I do give a slight edge to Jake Retzlaff for BYU. But I will say this quarterback unit, coming out of spring ball, it's about still where I expected heading into spring. Probably near the bottom of the Big 12 Conference in terms of overall quarterback units. I thought the final 2 weeks of spring, these quarterbacks were making significant strides and making some plays through the air and showing that deep passing ability that you want to see from this BYU offense. But I think expectations are low, and for good reason. They're going to give you some good plays, some highlight-worthy plays, but they're also going to give you some head-scratching moments too. Bohannon acknowledged to me that, you know, there were times in spring where his shoulder was a little bit sore. I thought, though, in the final 2 weeks, he started to settle in and get a better feel for this offense and play pretty well. I thought the final spring practice number 15 on Saturday, March 30th, I thought he was the best quarterback during the media window that we got to see. He had some deep balls that looked pretty impressive. I thought his decision-making in the intermediate throws, the ball placement, was very good. I think the concern, though, when it comes to BYU in 2024, how critical great quarterback play is for BYU and for really any program, but it feels like it matters even more at BYU because of the history of this program. They pride themselves on quarterback play. And to not have a clear-cut, bona fide next big thing in the quarterback unit, it just feels a little worrisome. You know, Retzlaff can be good. What's his ceiling, though? What's his potential? That I don't know. Is it anything more than a 6-6 football team? That I don't feel confident in yet at this juncture of the offseason. I'm willing to say that he could get BYU to the postseason. I think he's good enough to do that. I think Gary Bohannon could be good enough to get you 6 wins. But here's my thought, too, when it comes to the significance and the importance of having star power at the quarterback position. You're not just chasing to get back to the bowls as a 6-win team. To me, in this new Big 12, it's a lot bigger things at stake than just getting to the postseason and winning a few games. It's more about trying to establish yourself in the upper tier of this conference annually. The chase to 2031, the next media rights, that's a long ways away, but hey, it'll be here before we know it. You want to position yourself in this league and your personal brand as a program to be that of one of the best in the conference. That's what's at stake. And I feel like a lot of programs in this conference understand that. With Texas and Oklahoma gone, they are all chasing to be the big fish in this league, to establish itself and rise above the mediocrity of the conference and become an annual playoff and national title threat. Now, playoff and national title conversation, that is a distant thought for BYU. But as we've seen in this conference, things can change in a hurry from year to year. But you've got to have great quarterback play in order to make it happen. The last two Big 12 teams to reach the playoff, TCU, Texas, they're now going. I understand that, but they were in the Big 12 last year. Max Duggan, Quinn Ewers. You need to have star power at the quarterback position to reach the heights of this sport. It's just what it's been. Now, ground attacks are becoming more critical. We saw that with Michigan last year. But BYU prides itself on quarterback play. And since the NIL era began in 2021, BYU's hit rate on signing high-profile quarterbacks hasn't been great yet. Zach Wilson was class of 2018. That was pre-NIL. Jaren Hall, he was 2016. Pre-NIL. Keaton Slovis was the biggest name they've signed as a quarterback, and he didn't work out at all. Even pre-injury, that offense was not moving at all. There were times against Kansas, sure, and Arkansas, they did enough. But that offense, even with a healthy Slovis, did not look good last year. And that's a little bit worrisome, long-term for BYU. Again, if you want to focus just on 2024, great. This quarterback unit with Retzlaff and Bohannon is good enough to get you to 6-6. I think it could. It's still going to be a daunting task. This schedule is tough. But still, I think they can get to 6. But are they capable of in year 3 in the Big 12, 2025, of positioning the program to be a Big 12 title contender? I don't feel confident in that at all right now. Bohannon, of course, only has 1 year. Retzlaff has 2. And I think that also helps Retzlaff. His case and the argument to go to him is the fact that he's got multiple years. Because if you're BYU, you don't want to do this song and dance again in 2025 where you're going with a 1 year rental again. You can't get caught up in this again unless you get the best transfer portal quarterback in the cycle. And in the December window, there weren't many great quarterbacks that jumped into the portal. So I'm okay with BYU going with what they currently have. I still think they should have got a guy or two beyond what they got, my opinion. Because, again, I feel like quarterback, if you throw the money at this position, it rewrites narratives, it rewrites perception of your program. But I'm also okay with developing from within. Because if Retzlaff hits, you know, that's better long-term for you. But from what I saw in spring ball, I didn't see quarterbacks that say that's going to lead BYU eventually to a Big 12 title. And that might sound like a very harsh viewpoint or analysis, but again, you're in a conference where no one is the clear-cut gold standard in this league. You know, I'm hearing talks about Utah, Oklahoma State, Kansas State. Solid football teams. But the theme with all those teams the last couple years, they all lose about 4 to 5 games a year. Utah's got a pretty favorable schedule this year, sure. But anything can happen in this conference. You know, Arizona's been viewed as maybe a favorite. New coaching staff there could change. I could see him going 7-5, 8-4. Anything can happen. And that's the fun part about being in the Big 12. And that's why it felt like if you get this quarterback position unit right, you're going to be back in play for a quick turnaround. But going with Bohannon, who's coming back from a torn labrum injury, surgery, he suffered that injury in October 2022. Felt like he was pretty much out until November 2023. He almost considered retirement from football. It's a work in progress for him. And I think BYU is giving him the chance to continue to compete. They wanted to give him the opportunity. That's all he wanted. That was his only expectation, was an opportunity. They're giving him that opportunity to continue to compete going into fall camp. Jake Retzlaff continues to get his opportunity. And then at the same time, you're managing and avoiding having guys leave in the post-spring transfer portal window. My depth chart right now coming out of spring, Retzlaff, Bohannon, Trayson Bourget. I feel like there was improved play from Retzlaff, but my only concern again is what is the ceiling for him? What is the potential? I'm telling you, when you saw Jaron Hall, when you saw Zach Wilson, you saw endless potential. Jake Retzlaff's going to be a guy that you don't truly know what his potential can be until a bigger sample size in games. We've got 4 games already with Retzlaff, and it was 0-4, and some costly mistakes, devastating mistakes. But he did position a BYU team that was underdogs against 2 nationally ranked teams and put them in positions to win those games. So I think there's a feeling of you want to see a little bit more. I argue, too, the Southern Illinois game in week 1, August 31st, you're about, you know, 4.5, 5 months away till that game. That is such a critical game for whoever ends up getting the starting role for BYU. Imagine if BYU plays the way they did against Sam Houston. 14-0, that's not good enough. Against Southern Illinois, an FCS team who will not have 85 scholarship players, you better put up a 40-piece at least offensively. If there is struggle, to me, it's one of those deals where you go to the next guy and you change it up week by week and ride the hot hand. That's not ideal because if you got 2 quarterbacks, you maybe have none, as the old cliche goes. But it is critical for this position group to be clicking right out of the gates. Even though you should win that Southern Illinois game, and I believe you will, but if that offense struggles at all, you know, that's an interesting spot in week 1 for these QBs, whoever ends up getting the job. But I got Retzlaff emerging right now as QB1 for BYU coming out of spring. And credit to him, he had no interceptions. Aaron Roderick praised that coming out of spring. And Roderick noted that they ran their entire playbook. They took shots downfield. We saw that a handful of times during media observation windows with Retzlaff. There were a lot of intermediate throws, you know, short dink and dunk stuff. But I got to imagine they're going to get back to stretching the field. At least that's what they want to do. Because last year, the dink and dunk stuff did not work. It's not who BYU is. It's not what's going to work in this league for the Cougars. Running back position. Here's my running back depth chart. LJ Martin, 1. Miles Davis, 2. Hinkley, Folau, Ropati, 3. You could maybe say Folau, Ropati could be 2, Miles Davis, 3. It's kind of interchangeable there, but to me, LJ Martin's number 1. And LJ Martin comes into the season as a sophomore. He's the returning leading rusher for BYU. He's added 20 pounds to his frame. He did look quicker despite the weight gain. It was good weight. You know, LJ Martin should be a good running back for BYU. How good, we'll see. It's a wait and see with this offense. It really is. I think LJ Martin, though, has star potential. You know, when you talk about forecasting ceilings for the quarterbacks, I look at LJ Martin and say that guy has, you know, all Big 12 potential in his future. It's just tough in this league because the running backs are so good in this conference. LJ Martin might be the 10th best running back in this league. And you might think, oh, that's not good. No, it's just the top 5 running backs in this conference might be the 5 best running backs in college football this year. That's how good the running backs are in the Big 12 this season. So if you emerge, if you're LJ Martin and become a stud, and you're one of the best running backs in this league, you're one of the best running backs in the country. So high bar in the Big 12 for what good running back play is, and BYU was abysmal running the football last season. Offensive line has to get right, and we'll get to them a little bit later, but you know, I think it's an interesting move, too, though, at running back that BYU has not added a transfer portal RB. I liked what I saw from Miles Davis. I liked what I saw from Hinkley Ropati in spring ball. Hinkley Ropati got cleared around week 2 of spring practice as he worked his way back from the ACL injury he suffered in spring ball. Miles Davis, though, he's in his 5th year in the program. And up until, well, this year, he's just been viewed at best as a role player. He had that nice game against Cincinnati last year, and it turned into nothing. He didn't get any bigger workload, and look, the offensive line, the whole offense struggled to create any sort of ground attack for anyone that was toting the rock last season. But to say that he might be number 2, a guy that's by the same coaching staff has said basically he's a role player for his whole career and suddenly it's going to change into a bigger workload? That's interesting. These 3 running backs are going to play, all 3 of them. And Ropati has primarily been a role player too. Outside of those 2 games late in 2022 against Boise State and Stanford, Ropati has not had a consistent role in this program. And LJ Martin's only got 1 year under his belt, and last season he dealt with some injuries. So you're one rolled ankle away, if you're LJ Martin like he experienced last year, from going to guys on the depth chart that were primarily role players the past 4 years. But the saving grace for them is that they have a ton of experience and knowledge of what this coaching staff expects from them. Is that good enough to trump talent? We'll see. I feel like at the running back position, BYU has built such a good pipeline of running back production that they can get a legit RB out of the portal and say, hey, we got this string of guys. They're all making paychecks in the NFL, or at some point in their lives, they've had an NFL payday coming their way. Jamal Williams played for Kalani Sitake. Tyson Williams, Chris Brooks, Aiden Robbins is going to get an NFL paycheck. Oh, Tyler Algier, the single-season rushing leader in BYU history, wants a PWO. Come to BYU. There's carries to be had with LJ Martin. I know that BYU wants to focus on roster retention and developing from within, but man, I just feel like it'd be a safety net to get one more transfer portal RB. I think the 4th guy in this group that's going to play and get opportunities is Pokiawa Honga. He's the wild card to me in the mix, and I thought he showed well in spring ball to the point where he deserves a chance to play in the fall. So he's kind of the wild card that could emerge and maybe push Ropati, push Davis for a second team, third team spot. He's that 4th guy that could be interesting to follow going into spring. Jovesa DeMooney's there too, but I feel like Honga is farther ahead and he could be someone that factors in on game days coming up this fall. The wide receiver position. Here's my projected depth chart. Three deep. Chase Roberts, Darius Lasser, Cody Epps, the ones. Second team, JoJo Phillips, Keelan Marion, Parker Kingston. Second unit right there. Third team, Dominic McKenzie, Devin Downing, Weston Covey. That's your receivers. My projected depth chart for them. Keep in mind, my post-spring depth chart does not include summer additions. I'm fully expecting Cody Hagan, Tay Nakua to factor into this conversation. It's tough for freshmen, I get it, but they're talented enough. They're going to have an opportunity to make an impact. So I think they're going to be in the mix, so keep that in mind. Fessy Satake said this might be the deepest wide receiver unit he's had since being at BYU. I agree, and part of me disagrees. I know that's kind of sitting on the fence a little bit, but the agreement part, I feel like you've got, you know, seven guys that you can turn to on a game day. That's a nice luxury to have. That's numbers. That's, in essence, depth. Where I feel like I disagree is that there's not this clear-cut star. There's not a Puka Nakua. And look, that is a freakishly high bar. Puka Nakua was one of the all-time greats in BYU football history. He was. Outstanding. There was a reason Kalani Sitake said back in 2022 that Puka Nakua is the best receiver in college football. And Kalani doesn't make those kind of statements unless he truly believes it. And look, Puka was. And he was the best receiver in the NFL last year. That's how good Puka Nakua was. So I just kind of disagree a little bit with Fessy on that argument of it being the deepest because you don't have a Puka-type guy. When you have a bona fide star, and then you got, you know, four or five guys after him, that's depth. You know, just having seven guys that, you know, can be solid. You know, it's good on numbers, but who are going to be, like, the legit stars that give headaches to these opposing Big 12 secondaries? Because Big 12 secondaries are physical, and they are fast. And there were times last season where these receivers were stonewalled, these similar names. They faced man press. They couldn't beat it. So it's a little bit of wait and see on this group too. But I will say, I think Chase Roberts, to combat that man press they're going to see in the Big 12, you know, the five defensive backs that have become the standard of defensive looks in this league, Chase Roberts looks like he's at a little more weight. He looks like more of a physical receiver. He's almost like inviting the contact. He wants to show that he is a new receiver. And I saw glimpses of that in spring. And my early pick for number one guy is Chase Roberts. I said that last year, and he was a leading receiver. Even after Cody Epps left, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, BYU doesn't have a number one wide receiver. I said, don't worry. Cody Epps is not the number one guy regardless. It's Chase Roberts. And he ends up being the leading receiver in yards last season. But even though he was the leading receiver in yards, I think there's a feeling for him and everyone in this program offensively that there's more to be had. Like, no one's just feeling good about, oh, yeah, he was the leading receiver. It's only going to just go from here. Like, no, you got to get more production out of that spot. So I think Chase will be better. I think Darius Lasser will be better too. But again, it's a lot of projection-based. It's not, you know, I'm not seeing enough to say they are first team or second team all Big 12 right now. They could be, and I think that's exciting about the potential there for those two guys. But let's also call it what it is, too. Some of the success of the receivers also hinges on the quarterbacks. They got to get someone to toss them the pill. And if they don't have stability there at QB, well, then these receivers don't look as good as they could potentially be. Cody Epps I do have as the third starting wide receiver. I thought he gave us a reminder of what he can be in this offense in those, you know, last two games of the season last year, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. We didn't see him in spring. The problem with Cody is that he's been around the program now. He's going into his fifth year, and he just hasn't ever been healthy enough. There was that four-week stretch in 2022 where he was a legit dude, where he was a stud. Then he suffered that injury against Liberty, and it's just ever since it's been. There was a visit to the portal, and there were injuries last year, and it just was off and on. But he ended last year on a high note. Let's see what it turns into this season. The second unit, JoJo Phillips, Keelan Marion, Parker Kingston. Parker Kingston kind of had a tough day on that final spring practice. Few drops, not the most efficient day he'd probably want out of a spring ball. But, you know, he's someone that I think this BYU coaching staff likes, and the versatility that he can bring and maybe trick plays, the specials, he could dial those up. JoJo Phillips is interesting to me. You know, JoJo Phillips, I feel, is ready to burst onto the scene as a key contributor for BYU. I really like his size, his measurables, his speed, athleticism. He's got the whole package to be a really good receiver, but he just hasn't done it in a D1 game, really. And I think that's, you know, where you have a little bit of trepidation, but I feel like his talent is there to make an impact for BYU. Keelan Marion, curious to see what impact he makes this year, if at all. I think that he's definitely going to be in the 2 deep. He's going to play. But I want to see a bigger workload for him. I feel like this top six receivers, they all got to play. I feel like, you know, each one of these guys, I sometimes in years past, I say, keep the same three guys every single down. I don't know if you got that level of talent at receiver to say these are the only guys that will play every single snap. Again, it could be a case of ride the hot hand, whoever's performing the best in a given game. Kind of feel it out, see how it goes, and if that guy's having success, ride him every single snap. Otherwise, turn to some of these options that you do have that you feel like might be in the deepest group you've had for some time. I want to give a shout-out to Devin Downing. He looked pretty good in spring ball. I thought the final couple weeks of the season, he was making some nice catches. You know, keep in mind, he was going up against, you know, some third team, maybe scout team defensive guys, but making plays, lunging and diving out for a catch. Like, throw me against a scout team defensive player. I'm not diving out making a catch. You know, Devin Downing's got some skill. He was really good at American Fork. So he gave you some signs that Fessy Satake can put in his bank and say, okay, you know, that was some film that he showed us. He's making a step forward. He's being a little bit of a factor still. Probably not going to see him in games, ideally. But if you have a few injuries and you got to dig into that depth, Devin Downing gave some flashes of what he can be at BYU as a wide receiver. Tight end position for BYU, I've got Keanu Hill, Reiner Swanson, Ray Paulo. Keanu Hill will be interesting at tight end. He acknowledged that, you know, blocking DNs and blocking defensive linemen is a bit of a transition for him, and rightfully so. The man's only played wide receiver his whole life. That's a big adjustment going from, you know, wide receiver to tight end. But I think they can get creative with utilizing him as an inline tight end for BYU. And I think he could be a really good pass catcher for the Cougars at that tight end spot. And I think Hill is going to work out well at that position. I think Reiner Swanson is going to work out very well for BYU. This guy has all the tools to be a star for BYU. That first practice in spring, he was one of the best players on the field. In his first practice as a college football player, as a 17-year-old, he was outstanding. The way he runs, it's quite the sight. And just simply running. Like he just runs with so much intensity, so much violence, so much physicality, the way he moves. And he's got a body that's just, he's got size and he's quick. He's got quick feet, got quick movement. I just love what Reiner Swanson could be at BYU. I think he is going to be a, you don't want to put too much on him too soon, but I feel like he's going to have an impact. You know, Jackson Bowers was someone I felt that way last year. That never materialized. But at the same time, Reiner Swanson was much farther ahead this spring than Jackson Bowers was last year. And Jackson Bowers, for the most part of spring this year, he was in a sling. He was banged up. He was injured. So, Reiner Swanson, he went a full 15 practices, and he was good. And he's going to be someone that invites contact and can be an extra blocker if you need him. I think he can be really good in that aspect for BYU. And I think Swanson brings a lot to BYU. Maybe not necessarily this year, but man, he is going to be a very good player. Over the course of his 4 years with the Cougars, he will be outstanding. And then that third string, I got Ray Paulo, who surprisingly, on two different occasions, was a deep threat. He made two catches downfield. And I was like, wow, did not expect that from Ray Paulo. Remember him last year was a summer JC signee, now got a full year under his belt, and I thought he did a pretty good job for BYU in spring practices. Curious to see how his role evolves this season as well. Offensive line, we'll go with offensive tackle first. Braden Keim at left tackle, Caleb Etienne right tackle. Keim missed all of spring ball due to a thumb injury. He should be good to go for fall camp. Caleb Etienne, pleasant surprise story in spring. And I think it was great to see him at tackle because I think there was this feeling that he was going to slide in at guard maybe the rest of his time. He dropped a few LBs. He looks like he's in the best shape of his career. TJ Woods has been working with him. And look, I'm high on the potential of Caleb Etienne. You see these moments from him in practice and you just go, oh my goodness, where was this in the games last year? This guy's got so much ability that if it can be harnessed on game days, this guy could be a freak. And I hope for him that he becomes one of the most improved players, not only at BYU this season, but in the Big 12, because that's a heck of a story. Because he was, it's well documented. You go watch the film, and it's not anything groundbreaking here. I mean, there were games last season where he was just missing bad. And it was tough. It was tough to watch. And you just go, is it how he's being coached? Is it effort? Like, what is going on here? This disconnect of why he's struggling the way that he is. But I also credit him for not, you know, running away from it. He is embracing that, hey, I struggled last year. He comes back to BYU. He's looking to get better. He's embracing TJ Woods, the new offensive line coach. I just think there's a potential good story there for Caleb Etienne. Now, will he be the dominant offensive tackle that ends up being a day two NFL draft pick like everyone thought? Maybe not. But I will tell you, he is someone now that passes the eye test and instantly will get looks from scouts by his measurables and his build. Now he needs to pair that with the production on film. He has got to have good games, and he will become an NFL draft pick. He will. He will get a chance because he is massive. He is huge. And there is so much ability in him that it's got to now carry over to the games, and that's the challenge for TJ Woods to harness that. I think Braden Keim is going to be really good for BYU. He's been an underrated guy for years. I feel pretty good about him being an offensive tackle, and it was one of the more underrated additions getting him to come back for his COVID senior year. I think he's going to be a really good tackle for the Cougars. I also like second string, Trevin Osler. I've got Jake Eichhorn, former Weber State transfer. Third string, Jake Griffin, Caden Chidester rounding out the depth there. Osler was getting a lot of first-team reps with Braden Keim out, so that's something to keep in mind there. Eichhorn got a few first-team reps. You know, last year he primarily played a lot of guard. He could be one of those guys that's the sixth offensive lineman where in a pinch someone goes down with an injury. Because he's a veteran, he can plug in the guard, he can plug in the tackle, kind of like Ian Fitzgerald last year. That could be kind of the role for Jake Eichhorn. Jake Griffin out of Mesa, Arizona, second year back from a mission. He might be one of the most improved offensive linemen in the program from where he was last year to now, and that includes Caleb Etienne, just because I think it was a low bar for Griffin. He had to add so much weight. He's starting to look like a D1 offensive tackle now. Like last year, he was so thin coming back from the mission. Kind of reminded me of the Barrington brothers from years ago. Griffin will be a good player. I think it's just going to take some time. Ideally, you have the weight, you know, down the road, but you get to 2025, 2026, he could be a guy that could be a starter for BYU eventually. Offensive guard. This is where things are kind of interesting to me. Waylon Lopuaho is going to be a starter, and he's got all Big 12 potential. Waylon's going to be very good. He might be the best offensive lineman on the team this year. And for some strange reason, no one talks about him. It was weird last year going into the season in fall camp. Well, just like the previews, people would do their forecast of the offensive line. They never would put in Waylon Lapuaho as the starter. You go, what are you doing here? Like, I'm watching practices, and every snap on the first team, Waylon's at guard, and he's playing outstanding. Why is no one putting him in their starting lineup? I feel like I was the only one that had him as a starter last season. It was just insane to me. I'm like, am I taking crazy pills or something? Like, why is no one hyping up this guy? I remember The Athletic said Ian Fitzgerald was like a top 10, top 15 NFL draft tackle prospect, and he might play guard. And I'm just like, and people are saying, Mitch, you might need to reevaluate your depth chart projection. Waylon is there over Ian Fitzgerald, who's a heralded draft prospect. I'm like, no. I'm watching the practices. That guy is not. Anyway, Waylon's really good is what I'm getting at. He's going to be a good player, and he brings violence. He is the most nasty offensive lineman BYU has on this group, and that is what this offensive line needs. I've felt for the past few years, despite all the talent they've had, Blake Freeland's, Kingsley Suamataia's, they've been a little soft. They haven't been nasty enough. I want to see this BYU offensive line get nasty. Push teams back to the second level. Create the openings that we grew accustomed to with BYU O-lines under Kalani in 19 and 20. That's what they got to get back to. And I think Waylon can give that to BYU. The other guard spot, that's where there's some real competition. And that's where, going into fall camp, it's going to be one of the top battles that I'm watching for on that O-line. Right now, I've got Sonny Moccasini as the starting right guard. But I'm open to other players emerging in that spot. Honestly, it's either Moccasini or Joe Brown, to me, for that right guard spot. Joe Brown, Lone Peak High signee, served his mission the past 2 years, had committed to BYU as a preferred walk-on. Coaches gave him a scholarship upon his arrival back from a mission. Aaron Roderick said he was on the Gold's Gym mission. I wanted to say, Coach, it was more Vasa, but anyway, I digress. Still, Joe Brown looks like a freak. He kind of got banged up in spring ball. He returned the final week of spring practices, but Sonny Moccasini took a lot of first-team snaps, and I think those are always valuable to build that continuity, to get that film out there. And look, Moccasini is someone that I think the coaches, it's noteworthy that despite a coaching staff change and three multiple years after he arrived as a PWO, they've pretty much kept him at the same position. You know, it's always noteworthy when you get some of these linemen and they just don't really pan out. And they're like, let's switch him to D-line. Let's switch him here. Let's switch him to this spot. There's never really a home. And you go, that guy's probably never going to play. But Moccasini, he's pretty much consistently stayed at guard, with the exception of that two-week cameo back in 2022 when Kalani took over the defense. And he switched over Moccasini to the D-line, but then by season's end, he switched back to offensive line. And anyway, Moccasini's a good player. He was out of Tempview High School, signed with Utah State on scholarship out of high school, went on a mission, then signed with BYU. I think he could be a starting guard. I do. But I just feel like you need some more numbers there, and I think more competition. If it's not Moccasini, it's Joe Brown. Jake Eichhorn could be there too. Weston Jones, Bruce Mitchell. That kind of rounds out the depth. But I think you need some more numbers there, clearly, along that offensive line. Center position, Connor Pay, Peter Falonico, Sam Daw. Pretty self-explanatory, I think, cut and dry there. That's probably one of the least debated depth chart spots, I think, on this team. Connor Pay, he's going to be your starter no matter what at center. He's got NFL potential. And I thought it was, you know, fun to hear him talk and say, you know what, the best way to get drafted is to win. And look, you look at some of the best BYU teams and biggest NFL draft classes, they follow BYU teams that won. The 2021 NFL draft, they had Zach, they had Brady Christensen, they had Kyrus, they had Dax Milne, they had Chris Wilcox, fresh off an 11-win season. You know, go back to 85, go back to 97 draft classes, pretty deep classes by BYU standards of draft picks. The common thread, they win. So I thought that was a refreshing take by Pay. He acknowledged, too, that He could have went to the NFL. Another option was coming back to BYU, which, of course, he chose. But he also thought transfer portal. But he did note that was a last-ditch resort. And that was, I think, refreshing to hear because I think so much people say everyone in college football, in college sports, is just turning to the portal and they're abandoning the trials, the challenges in front of them. Well, Connor Pate could have left, probably could have got a nice payday to leave and probably get six figures because of his track record of success at the offensive line position. He could have got a nice payday as a one-year grad transfer, but he stays at BYU. He's going to finish out his career as a Cougar, and he loves T.J. Woods. And honestly, he credits T.J. Woods' hiring as being one of the big reasons why he's back at BYU. So you can lock in Connor Pate. I'm almost ready to say that's definitely Sharpie for Connor Pate as the starting center for BYU. But that's my projected depth chart for the Cougar offense. Hope you enjoyed that breakdown of this post-spring projected depth chart for the Cougars. Look, spring football, it's in the rearview mirror, but BYU football will be here before we know it. Fall camp's going to start around July 31st. We've got Big 12 Media Day coming up in mid-July. We're about 3 months away, folks. Let's get it on. Then we got the EA Sports College Football 25. Oh, baby, it's almost here. Let's go. Let's enjoy this little break. We'll keep monitoring BYU basketball, any coaching carousel with Mark Pope. I'm keeping tabs on any of that. But otherwise, BYU football, it's almost around the corner. I'll have a defensive projected depth chart breakdown here on the podcast a little bit later this week. And continue to subscribe to the show on any podcast platform. Leave a 5-star rating and review. It helps out the show a ton. I'll talk to you next time here on the Cougar Tracks podcast. It's powered by KSL Sports.